I was throwing rocks at the TV when Faulkner was the sixth bowler used. For Michael Clarke to come on the fourth bowler in front of Faulkner is an absolute disgrace. What a load of junk that is. Kim tried to tell me one day, I think it was about 84, and West Indies, he tried to tell me it's a team game. But I said, no, it's not, Kim, it's an individual's game.
Right, you're bloody well right.
On Halftime, right, Rodney Hall.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
Hockey brought to you by Sensational Seafood Sundays at Ribera's North Melbourne. Currently celebrating their first birthday for just $99. Enjoy a two-course lunch for two, including a bottle of wine. That is a Sensational Seafood Sundae. Johnny Ribera doesn't just catch the fish. He's at the market every morning at 3 a.m. sourcing quality, fresh seafood. You can't go past Ribera's, 480 Victoria Street, North Melbourne, where there's a fantastic private function room as well. Large groups are welcome. Give him a call, 9329-1634. Rodney, g'day.
Half, how are you, mate?
I'm very well. How was your trip?
Jeez, I'm glad I got out of the joint. I was flying back Monday, I don't know, it seems like years ago.
So before the start of the fourth test?
I'm trying to think now. Last Monday, flew out, and then as I was flying, I thought, gee, I wish I was still there, you know. And then I watched the stuff from that first morning. I've never seen anything like that, Half.
Well, I was going to ask you if you've
seen
anything like
that. Have you ever seen it like that?
No.
I mean, just incredible. Just unbelievable. Guys just nicking everything, playing at everything. It was like they were instructed to play at the deliveries, and the ability to nick them was quite incredible.
It was that was a topic of discussion at the time, Rodney, about all players playing at the ball rather than being able to just watch the ball and let it go through to the keeper and get your eye in and play through the V, the VL first 15, the Greek Chapel system. Were you surprised that after the first couple of wickets had fallen that there wasn't a conscious decision to just do that, to make a shift in the attack of the Australian batsman?
Well, I think that in the second innings when he bowled an over just before lunch to Warner, it's as good an over as you'd want to see.
He Still bowled, broad.
Yeah, broad. Yep.
Bowled brilliantly, by the way.
His over, every ball landed in the same spot, but they were angling in and just seaming away and going through at good height too. So he's on a good length. Broad bowled super well, but I thought they might have just regrouped a bit after Birmingham when we were knocked over so cheaply in both innings as in Birmingham. The thing that was really, really annoying with Australian batting was they lost Anderson in that second innings down at Birmingham,
yep,
and we still didn't fire a shot in the second innings. That was the one that was really annoying. Totally deflated in that Trent Bridge test match. But when they lose their main bowler, Anderson, you would have thought, well, things are stacked back for us. And we'll learn from the first innings. The conditions were tailor-made for Anderson. He's out of the game. And then Finn bobs up and takes a six for. But the batting in the last two games, they were two-day test matches. Just over two-day test.
That's
2 days.
That's disgusting, isn't it?
It was. It's the worst performance ever by Australian cricket in those two test matches. Ever.
Yeah. No.
2 days.
It's a blight on the mindset of the current cricketer, if that's the case. If you're going to get two tests in a row that don't go 3 days. Seriously.
Well, we won the toss in the first game. So I'm just, I know we talked about it the other day and I thought more about it. And it's different if you play a district game. You rock up to a district game. It's a two-day game. So there's the wicket, guys. It's a green top. It's overcast. So you take advantage of that situation. So you're going to bowl, aren't you? Take advantage of it. And I sort of think sometimes you just got to take advantage of things. But Michael Clarke, obviously what had happened in 2005 with Ponting, putting the opposition in at the same venue, Birmingham, he's probably reluctant because of history. History may have just made him go that direction.
Had it been, that's an interesting point that I reckon, I'm not sure it's been discussed at length too much. Had it been that Trent Bridge, the third test, and we had that wicket, and because the history wasn't at Trent Bridge, but it was at Edgbaston where we sent them in, they made the runs. Had it been at Trent Bridge, the third test, and we won the toss, do you think you would have bowled?
Well, I know captains don't think much about bowlers, but a lot of the bowlers these days, a lot of the fast bowlers bowl on wickets that you, really, they're deathbeds for them.
Yep.
They're so flat. They've been made by some of these curators that just make them so dead. So you rock up to a game, you see, you know you're going to have to work really hard on some of those wickets. You rock up to a game and it's tailor-made for you as a fastball. You look at it and you think, well, surely we're going to take advantage of this. And they bat. I don't understand it. Take it when it's there and knock the side over. Show some faith in your bowlers. Hey, we can knock this side over cheaply. And what was annoying about Birmingham is we just knocked them over cheaply at Lord's. Cheaply. Just remember, we knocked them over 100 and something.
Yep.
So we've got them up against the ropes.
Yep.
Why wouldn't you just put them in and say, fellas, and we've got show some faith in your fast bowlers. We had a good attack. There's no problems about the attack. Guys, let's take them. Let's put them to the cleaners. We had them. What advantages? Use them.
Well, Michael Clark said had he won the toss at Trent Bridge, he would have bowled. Now that we didn't win the toss, we did. But again, just the change of the mindset after Edgbaston. This is why I asked you the question before, that the history of Edgbaston, the ghost of Edgbaston past, seemed to have got to him in terms of his decision-making in the way that he decided to bat on that wicket. Because had it been Trent Bridge, I reckon he would have bowled first.
But the day before, he said both sides will bowl on this. He said that the day before.
This is the haunting
of Birmingham. He said both sides will bowl. So, you know, I can't sort of believe what Michael sort of says. And it might be a bit of a mind game or whatever. But there's no minds. We're just not up to it. Now, I just want to jump in here quickly because of the book. I've got a book out.
Have you got a book out?
Yeah. And I see it's my show. I want to give it a bit of a go.
It's not an Ashes diary, is it? You haven't just done
the Ashes diary together, have you?
You're not one of those blokes, Hoggy.
No, right? It's not an Ashes diary. Now, it's called Speed Thrills, but what I just want some advice from you because I want to flog it and make a few bucks out of it.
Right, you know? Okay.
Well, and obviously the publisher does it, and you get a little bit of a cut. You don't get much to do these sort of books.
Do I get a cut?
Well, your advice could be helpful here.
Okay.
If you had some books, how would you flog them? Yeah. Would you go down to Ribera's and set up, a table and have, say, 20 or 30 books there, say, for next Thursday or next Friday? Would you go and sit there? What would you do?
I'd move
personally
into Ribera's if I was you and just sit out the front every day with big stacks
with
of
books.
That's what I'd be doing. I'll tell you what I would be doing. I'd be flogging it off willy-nilly on your Facebook and Twitter page, Rodney. That's what I'd be doing.
Can you flog it through there, can you?
It's an excellent Father's Day present. Father's Day is not too
What about sitting out here in the cold in Swan Street? Could you see that happening?
I can't see you.
Do you reckon I could get some sales
in
Swan Street?
The only problem with this face-to-face sale stuff with you is you hate people. So that's going to be a concern. Your ability
to interact
with
gonna,
people.
No. Well, when it comes to receiving cash, I like people. No. People are all right then. And the only way you'll get cash is if you receive it from a person.
Right. Yes. That's
so
true.
So I can't. How will I get cash out of Facebook?
Or
Twitter.
Just order through a firm press.
So I'll sit out here in the cold with a big blanket rugged up. Say, what about next Tuesday from 12 to 1 or something? Just give it a trial. Has anybody done this at SEN?
I don't think anyone's done that before, Hoggy.
Probably a bad time of the year. It's a bit cold.
It's a bit cold. Be sitting out.
I'll try it.
But
I'm going to give it a go.
Far away. It is a great book, Speed Thrills. You've just handed me an edition, and what I love about your book, and we're not going to be on the book all afternoon, Hoggy. Maybe just 80%.
Want to give a couple away to good callers.
80% of it. I love this. Hoggy's intro. It says this was page not too.
No,
many.
I don't think this is true. I think you're making this up.
No, this is in the book, right? Have you read your book? Only a fast bowler could understand the sheer adrenaline rush you get watching a batsman flinch away from one of your thunderbolts. What a wonderful introduction that is. Because the mere mortal in us, we have no idea. We don't know. We think we get it, Hoggy, but you've lived that adrenaline, and you know what it's like when a batsman flinches away with one of your thunderbolts.
Well, let's go the reverse. Only a batsman would know what a cover drive can do to a bowler who's run all that way in from the side screen and gets whacked through the covers for four. Only you batsmen would know that.
Would you? No. Well, this is a philosophical question for a fast bowler, lunatic fast bowler. Would you prefer me to play a cover drive off you for four? Would you be happier with that, or would you be happier with me pulling one of your short balls over the fence, backward square for six? Which one are you angrier at?
No, not happy with a pull shot. No,
yeah,
no.
Right.
Well, a hook at top edges over the fence, you go, yeah, I'll beat him for pace. But a pull over mid wicket, no, don't like that one.
Right.
Cover drive, fine. Pull over mid wicket, no, thank you. No.
Right. Okay.
No.
Well, we'll give away a few copies to our best calls through the afternoon, 9429. 11:16. If you've got any ideas for Hoggy, how we can make an income out of this, we want him to do that. We want him to be able to come in every Tuesday.
These will be signed.
Without any pressure of financial insecurities.
Do you reckon it'd be better unsigned? Will I make more money out of unsigned books?
Oh, no.
They've got to be signed.
Got to be signed.
Best wishes to someone.
Yeah.
Or worst wishes or whatever.
No, you don't like people. Make it best, just to sort of warm best to people. We'll give away some books through the afternoon.
Try and trick people, yeah.
What's it about, Speed Thrills?
It's got a little bit to do with we looked at Mitchell Johnson. That's John Anderson and myself. We looked at Mitchell Johnson 2 years ago when he just ran amok through the English.
Yep.
And it's sort of thought people just love fast bowling, don't they? Like the other morning when Mitchell sent that one at Bairstow at Birmingham. How good was that? It's like a high mark. Someone's got on someone's shoulders and jumped and taken an absolute specky. It's a specky. It's a massive bump when someone's just gone crunch and down they go. So we thought, well, let's. There's a bit of a book there. And we rang up some blokes were mates and some blokes I had never spoken to Sir Wesley Hall. Actually, John got him. Akram was a beauty. Most of them were really fantastic, really, to speak to.
Mitchell Johnson, Michael Holding, Wazim Akram, Alan Donald, Dennis Willis, Wes Hall, Mike Proctor, Brett Lee, Shane Bond, Jeff Thompson, Frank Tyson, Lynn Pesco, Devin Malcolm, who you reckon's the fastest you've seen, is that right?
Devin Malcolm, no.
No, who said that? Somebody said he was the fastest he played against. Sean Tate, John Snow, Shoaib Akhtar, Rodney Hogg. And all the stats as well from the best fast
I didn't want to be in and half. You know, I don't like to push. I'm happy to talk about the 41 at 12.05, but it was a lucky summer. You know, I don't want to push myself in those names. But I just, John Anderson, who sometimes you work with people, you're a little bit concerned, really. Sometimes you think they're mates, but he pushed me in there. And then he had the audacity to put Mitchell Johnson's ninth quickest bowler living. Now, Mitchell's faster than that, isn't he? He's not the ninth. He should be up high, but John, in his wisdom, thought he'd go that way.
Rodney Hogg with us next to Ribera's. Check out the sensational seafood sundaes. They are magnificent. North Melbourne store celebrating their first birthday. Check them out. Google Ribera's and the rest is easy. Hoggy, we were talking during the break about fast bowlers. We'll get to that discussion shortly.
Hazelwood.
We'll get to that shortly.
Yeah.
Because we've got some calls on the line that want to talk to you. Yes. Because they love the fact that Speed Thrills is out now with you and John Anderson. Nick's in Carnegie. G'day, Nick.
G'day, Hoggy.
G'day, Nick.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Listen, big game day. I don't know, Collingwood, maybe someone at the MCG. Why don't you sit underneath the Dennis Lilly statue, mate, with your blanket and your gloves and your scarf? And yeah, I reckon you'd sell a few. Cash in hand, by the way.
I wouldn't be selling any at Carlton games. No one turns up anymore, do they? It's not a bad idea. I like the sound of that.
Sit outside front of Eddie had just a little stall for you.
Yep.
Can you do that?
No, I don't think you're allowed to do it, but I might do it.
Never stopped you before.
Move on. What about Brownie racing out and getting the pitch, the start of the game?
Oh, Campbell.
Campbell.
At Lord's.
At Lord's. That was magnificent, wasn't it?
Just get out.
He's out there.
Just take a photo.
Only they can, and someone in a coat. What's going on here? They wouldn't know, would they? The English.
No.
Anyway, they got him off, but he was out there.
That's all right. It'd be good.
It's incredible.
Roll the dice.
So I might get Campbell to sell the books out the front of the MCG because he's the sort of bloke they wouldn't kick away.
He would do that. He's got that sort of front, Brownie. Yeah. He would do that. Don't you worry about that. Now, have you got a little copy for my mate? Can we give away a copy of your book?
So that gentleman just sent.
Gave you some suggestions.
Well, we've only got a couple of books. He sounded good, but what if half a dozen really good calls come through?
All right, you're in the running, Nick. You're in the running.
Sorry, Nick, but...
So many books you got.
Don't go early.
Righto. Okay. Alex is on the mobile, as he will be. G'day, Alex.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Alex.
Hey, well.
Boy, that was really hard watching the last couple of test matches, and I'm really offended that professional players put in a performance like that. I think they need a dose of reality. I think they're in ivory towers and probably more worried about their money than what they're actually representing and have the honour to do. And I've got a suggestion for them. I think they should go and meet all those touring parties that spent all their hard-earned money to get over there and just socialise them and understand what an honour it is to play for Australia and what they're representing.
Pretty fair sort of a call because those people spend $14,000-$15,000 to go and watch. No one's guaranteed a victory, but you want a little bit of backbone when you get over there and spend your $15,000 on tours, don't you?
Yeah,
good call, mate. That was a good call.
Righto, you're in the running too, Alex.
He's right in the running.
Right in the running. Well, you're not obligated to do it for those people alone, Hoggy. You should be obligated to do it because you're representing your country. The people there that have invested their hard-earned, as you rightly say, should expect a much better performance, but it's not. They're not the people you're playing for. You're playing for the fact that you're wearing one of those big baggy greens. Although it leads me into this discussion that with the retirement of Michael Clarke, there's been a lot of feedback about Michael Clarke. Not all positive, Hoggy. Normally you get plaudits and accolades and people coming from everywhere just to tell you how awesome you are when you retire. This doesn't seem to be the case for Michael Clarke, to the point where John Buchanan, former coach of Australia, said he didn't quite get the baggy green culture. Now, this is not in reference to the test matches just played, but just as a general sort of feeling from Michael Clarke that he didn't quite get the baggy green culture. Is that what you've heard and understood through the journey?
It's a pretty harsh article. Where was that written today? Who wrote that?
That's today, Ben Dorries and Robert Craddock, Crash.
Yeah. Well, Crash, yeah. I spoke to Crash before. That's a harsh article because he has been a superstar cricketer. And
no one's questioning that.
No, that's right. But you want to see him bathe in his glory just at the end, perhaps come out a little bit later about bagging him. So he's been pretty bad. Hayden came on radio. It's disappointing when your teammates have a bit of a go. I think Simon's had a go at him. I know Simon's and...
Well, they didn't get along. Clark, they did initially and then things...
Don't get on at all. Simons will never speak to him again. So when you start hearing that and you see Kadich and you see Hussey's last game, there was a lot of conjecture about the fact that Hussey wanted to have a drink in the rooms and Clark said, no, we're going off to a pack of function. So seems to be Michael rubs people the wrong way. And Hayden to come out, Hayden's been, and he's a baggy green man, so he's come out today and had a bit of a go. So, you know, we might have lost direction with the baggy green for sure.
Well, there seems to have been some unrest through this series, for whatever reason you want to put it down to. There seems to be some unrest through the change room. We spoke about that a couple of weeks ago.
I think we'll get it back with Stephen Smith. I think his quality is not... Michael's been caught up in another world, hasn't he? Fast cars, women and big mansions. He's been caught up in that world a little bit, hasn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, when he had to come back to... He was engaged to Lara Bingham. He had to come back to break that from a New Zealand tour. Now, that's not right. We talked about that then, but that's just rubbish doing that sort of thing, isn't it? A fiance, you don't leave a tour for Australia to break it off with a fiance, do you? So it's all been about Michael Clark. I like the word we when I see captains or coaches speaking, us and we.
Yep.
I don't like the word I too often, and I don't see too many us's and we's with Michael. It's all about I. Yep.
No one's disputing the fact he's a fantastic batsman, by the way.
No.
But there's some concerns about the way he's led this team through his tenure as Australian cricket captain. That's what's coming out now. No one's saying he's a rubbish cricketer, didn't deserve to be an Australian cricketer, because he did. His batting was awesome.
But when he was gone, when he dropped that catch, we spoke about it the other time, when he dropped that catch, little Bally just pushed one into the slips and he dropped it. Michael Clark never drops a catch. So you sort of thought something's not right. Has he lost his reflexes a little bit? You know, he's only 34, 35, but,
34.
You know, people lose their reflexes at different ages, don't they?
I assume they do, yeah.
We're in an absolute quandary how we're going to go forward now with the team, because there's only two that really, Warner and Smith. Now, Rogers shouldn't play, after this test match, he shouldn't play anymore because he's a candidate to get hit in the head again, and we've seen what's happened to him, and he ducks in line with the ball. The ball's only got to just not rise as much. He's going to get donged again. So he should, his career should be over. I think he was retiring anyway.
He's retiring anyway.
He's had a good series over there. I think he's averaging about 60. I had it somewhere, but Rogers averaging 62, 437 runs at 62. So you can say
Well, without him, it would have been nothing.
Oh, he's had 2, 4, 5 good hits in that series. So he's certainly going to hold his head high. But we lose him. Voges is 36 years of age. Sean Marsh, well, you know I'm not a fan of Sean Marsh. Clark's gone. So you've really got Warner and Smith as the two batsmen. So there's heaps of opportunities for young batsmen out there.
All right.
We don't seem... You break, is it?
Well, no, I want to get to Mark in Frankston. He wants to tell you who needs to play for Australia. G'day, Mark. Right.
G'day, boys. How you going?
Good, thanks.
Now, listen, I'm thinking a little bit outside the square. We need someone patriotic that would do anything, opening the batting on the greenest wicket ever known to man. And there's only one man in Australia I know that will put his whole heart and soul on the line.
I appreciate you saying
Hewitt.
That. Leighton Hewitt. you know what? I'd back him in too to put up a fight. I'd back him in against Stuart Broad at his finest to put up a fight, little Lele.
Yeah, no, it's a fair call. We did not fight at all in those two test matches. No, you're right.
Good on you, Mark. You're in the running. You're in the running for the book, surely.
But is it a product of the T20? I know other countries play it as well, but it's a test match. It's a test match. So it tests people. T20 doesn't test people. Just how far can you hit the ball? That's what tests them, how far they can hit it. So it doesn't test them. The art of batting, it's lost. And the art of being a selector, I reckon, has been lost too.
Rodney Hogg's back in the studio after his trip overseas for the Ashes campaign. Fortunately, he wasn't there for the fourth test. He blinked. Well, he would have blinked and missed it at one stage there with the Aussie batting order collapsing there on the first day at Trent Bridge. But Kevin's in Coburg. He wants to talk to you, Hoggy. G'day, Kev.
G'day, Half. Hoggy, have you related to Boomer Harvey from North?
Well, what's happened?
Oh, just the way you're ducking and weaving when Half's trying to give away a couple of your books. They reckon Boomer's still got his first quid.
Oh, I see. Well, I've only got two books here, and there might be 10 calls. Yeah. I would have brought more books in. I didn't realise there was going to be... No, we're not ducking. Go on, try and win a book. Give us something.
Well, my grandson's training at the moment for an all-rounder. He's got an English coach come out to do a course, what do you call them, a school with him, and he's top quality, mate. So I reckon in about 5 years' time, you'll be getting called up. Brock Bamford's his name.
The kid or the coach?
No, the kid, and he'll be...
And Steve Chapman's the coach, is he? Stevie Chapman the coach?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. Where are you? Down Hallam somewhere, are you?
Hoppers Crossing,
oh, yeah. No, beautiful man, Steve Chapman.
Terrific man, yep.
He's in good hands.
Teaching him everything he knows, and he'd love to read your book.
Would he? Well, it's at all good shops. I don't think this call's been good enough. Sorry, mate, to give a book away.
Kev, he's been whacked down early doors there. Thank you, Kev.
He's gone, Kev.
Hey, he had a crack. He went down swinging. Yeah.
Paul's your grandfather. Mate, listen again.
Paul's in Ringwood. Hello, Paul.
Yeah, g'day, Hoggy. Look, a suggestion to you, mate. This is what Jim Cairns used to do. You get down to Paran Market, and there's a little foyer area.
Is your name really Paul?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, why? Who do you think
No, I just can hear a voice there of someone I know.
All right. No, I'm Paul.
Okay.
You get down to Paran Market with a card table.
Yeah.
You advertise them at cost price, $5 extra for autographs.
Yeah.
There's a little foyer area. You can sit there till 8 o'clock, and then you can move inside the Paran Market where they allow buskers, and you can be packed up and finished by 11.
Look at that. Look at that. Paul's just...
But the question I have for you, Hoggy, is simple.
Yeah.
You're the captain of the Australian team. You've lost 5 wickets for 20-odd runs. Do you declare and put the Poms in and see how they go on the wicket?
No.
Why not?
Because in the history of cricket, someone always comes good and gives you a score, whether you're 2 for none or 5 for 20 or 7 for 50. I can remember we were 7 in my first test match. We were 7 for about 26.
Were you really?
In the Gabba. And McLean and Hogg put on runs. So someone's always going to do something except at Trent Bridge when we're knocked over for 60. So you don't declare no.
Thank you, Paul, for your call. It was a sentiment that was being widely spouted on social media at the time when the Aussies were 5 for not many and 6 for not many, that we should declare and put them in. But whilst it did cross my mind as well, Hoggy, I did see that as a very defeatist attitude that you couldn't actually gain anything from, really. Because there's no more runs to get if you declare. There's nothing else in it for you, apart from perhaps 1 or 2 wickets. But the way the English batted throughout the entire campaign, and there's still one test to go, clearly, they were always much better at adapting to conditions than we were. So they were never going to be in trouble, I didn't think, if we had declared at 5 or 6 down.
I couldn't see anybody in the history of the game. It's easy to do it on Twitter and talk about it, but I couldn't see anybody in the history of the game declaring at 5 for 20 when it's a 5-day game.
No.
And you've got people like Mitchell Johnson and Stark and Hazelwood and a few there who can give you 20s and 30s. So you just got to bide your time. If you had have had, say, Rackham and Alderman,
Hogg
and someone else,
and then McGrath.
And Lilly, well, you declare. If you're 6 out, you're all out. Well, that's sort of a tail. But we haven't got a tail now. We've got blokes who can bat a little bit. Mitchell Johnson's has got a test batting average of over 20, 24 or something. And Hazelwood and whoever else was in there.
I did think about it myself, but
did you?
I thought better of it. I thought, no, that's not the answer. It's a defeatist attitude. We cannot possibly win with that.
And Hazelwood, we talked about, well, we haven't talked about him, but he bowled better in the first 2 test matches on wickets that were hard to bowl and with not much in them. He bowled better in those 2 games than he did when he was presented a green seam or
Why
2 green seam.
Why do you think that
seam?
Was?
I've got no idea. Perhaps he's only early to test cricket, so he's not seasoned, so... he might have been carrying a slight injury or just lost his ability to swing it. But
surely
he was landing the ball.
Well, you've got Peter Siddle there.
He might have got a bit annoyed by left-handers. Cook was hanging around a bit there, and he might have annoyed him a bit. But his line and length was not anywhere near as the same as what he was on the 2 flat wickets. I'd love to know the answer to that question.
We don't have that. Surely he's not injured. If any of them were injured, surely Peter Siddle just comes in and bowls.
Yeah, well, Siddle, you know, it's easy to say it now, but Sid's on those 2 wickets should have been in the team. You needed a bloke who can bowl a test match length, who takes the ball away a little bit, and Sid's bowls a test match length, same as Harris. Well, Harris would have killed him. But the bottom line is we batted so pathetically, it wouldn't have mattered who was really bowling.
That's true.
You can criticise the bowling as much as you want, but really, batting was just, you've got to make at least 200 in one innings and say, you've got to give yourself 450, 500 runs in a test match to give the bowlers something to bowl to.
No, fair point. Thank you, Paul. Dom's in Geelong. G'day, Dom.
Yeah, g'day. Look, just make a few comments and get Hoggy to respond to them. Listen, mate, did we underestimate the opposition on their home ground? Number two,
yes.
Notice that they had an Australian coach, Trevor Bayliss, that was over there, and I've heard nothing mentioned of that. Three, Hoggy, you've bowled in England, so you understand the conditions. I noticed, mate, that one of the best comments I heard was, and I was listening to the radio, was from Jeff Boycott. We know we love Jeff, the Yorkshireman. And he said that if they'd batted through to lunchtime, the Australians, that they should have known, Hoggy, that the wicket after lunchtime wouldn't be swinging as much. So basically their defensive skills weren't in, and they lasted, 18.3 overs. So just a comment about that. And number four, obviously they're concentrating on 20 and 50 overs, so they've got to go back and, Hoggy, rethink the whole thing, because there is still a lot at stake when we play England in the Ashes, you know?
Well, surprise, surprise, but obviously, as I said with Half a few weeks ago, the only way we were going to lose if they got the perfect conditions. Now, that's all very well they can give a wicket that suits bowling, but they got the overcast conditions, which I haven't seen the ball move around for ages. That was olden day sort of cricket, where the way the balls swing around, we usually get the flat wickets. 2 years ago at Trent Bridge, that kid Agar made his debut on a wicket that didn't have a blade of grass on it at Trent Bridge. 2 years later, we've got a seeming minefield. Now, did someone in the ECB decide early, say day two at Lord's, where they served up a really flat wicket and they said, we've taken Anderson out of the game, he's a match winner, Australians don't play seam quite as well, let's have a low scoring game and have a go at them because we're not going to beat them on flat wickets. Did someone there then ring through to Trent Bridge and say, then ring through to Birmingham and
juice
say,
it up.
Leave grass on the wicket? Because Trent Bridge certainly had a poultice of grass left on it. And they didn't even have Anderson. So I think they made a decision. 2 years ago, they said, we've got a spinner. Let's have a dry wicket for Swan. This time, they've then said, well, I don't think we're going to beat this mob on flat wickets. We've done everything right at Lord's. We left it dry again, but their bowlers killed us. Mm. So why don't we try and get Anderson back in the game? So they made a seeming wicket. And then, long and behold, they get an overcast condition. And long and behold, Clark bats. So it was the perfect storm.
The perfect storm. Mm. Thank you, Dom. Yeah, Hoggy was talking about the wickets. We mentioned, I remember talking to you about that after Lords, that they'd be stupid if they didn't try and get a bit more juice in the grass on the wickets for the next couple of tests just to see how it unfolded, because they were no chance on what they'd prepared in the first two.
Yeah. Mm. We're the only country, I reckon, that don't prepare wickets to suit the situations. We know that the whacker is a bouncy type wicket. That's it. You know you're going to go over to Perth and get a bouncy wicket. I think when Warnie was at his ultimate, or not even when he was, his whole career, they left, I reckon Sydney spun a bit further than it should have. That might have been just Shane, but it seemed to be a real spinner's wicket, Sydney. Perhaps we might have been a little bit helping Shane a bit there with the spin, but I haven't seen us help our own mob too much over here. There's the wicket guys play on it, but I'm sure the English, they want to win, and so they just fiddle around a bit with the pitches.
They're entitled to do so. Steve's in Ellerslie. G'day, Steve.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good.
Hoggy, I've told you the answer on Twitter, but I got donuts. The answer is Milo cricket, mate. It's the way we teach kids to play cricket and bat, and the fact is we don't teach them how to bat. And so you've got all these kids getting through to high levels with flaws in their technique. Anyone could have said that Smith would be a big risk. I know he made a double 100 on a flat deck at Lord's, but he's always going to be a big risk against the moving and seaming ball. And it just defies logic.
Why was that? Well, tell me why you sensed that Smith was going to be a problem on seeming wickets.
Because of his technique. Have a look at it.
Well, go on. Tell me about his technique.
Well, he's got an eye like a dead fish, but the way he wanders around, he's always a chance to be nicking and caught like that. The footage that Channel 9 had on the other night of their feet, in fact, that they went nowhere compared to Joe Root, it's diabolical.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I'd love to see De Villiers. I would have loved to have just seen how De Villiers would have batted, because I think Smith's copied De Villiers a little bit, and Ambler. They go across the wicket, so they're moving.
Yeah.
They move a little bit when they bat, but on the flat wickets, as you said, they can get away with it. But on these seaming wickets, you've got to be stationary. You've got to watch the ball carefully, and you can't be moving around.
the thing about Steve.
That's not a bad call. Give that bloke a book.
Oh, that's getting a book. Steve, stay on the line.
Donuts on Twitter.
Donuts on Twitter, books on radio.
Books
that's,
on radio.
That's how we do things here on Halftime. Yeah. Steve's down the line. Speed thrills, cricket's faster than the bowlers and bounces batsmen in serious pace. Rodney Hogan, John Anderson, that's coming your way. Well done.
But my cricket's a long bow, isn't
well,
it?
Well, you got to start early. Hey? Start them early, Hoggy. Teach them how to do that.
Poor old Milo. The people running Milo are responsible for Australian batting
well,
badly
well,
in the Ashes.
Maybe a little bit further up the chain because perhaps they're not fully equipped down at Milo. With
we just
the
don't
parents.
Give. But we don't give guys much of a chance. And I said, there's is it the art of selection now? It's just in cuckoo land. The art of selection. I'm not having a go at these selectors now. But yeah. When you've got the T20, and I can look at Maddison. A couple of years back, Maddison from New South Wales. Now, he made, I think, a couple of centuries early for New South Wales. He's a young kid. Where does he get to? We play him the T20. I mean, what are we trying to produce there?
Yep.
You get a quality young man. I want to see him get through to the test. I don't want to see him mucked up by T20 cricket. But as I said, the art of selection is virtually impossible now. Where was Doolan? What's happened to Doolan, Burns, Maxwell? Bailey, Hendricks, well, Bailey was too old and didn't quite have it. But anyway, Quiney, Cowan was starting to get a few little scores. We don't seem to give, if you deserve, we're giving away baggy greens too easily and we take them off them too easily, too quickly. We don't, if you're going to give someone a baggy green, you must have seen, as a selector, you must have seen some quality in him to go, I want this bloke to play for Australia. Well, 2 weeks later, I don't want him to play for Australia. We've been too, I talked about the curse of the baggy green, but you go back to Brad Hodge, 2008, and since 2008, we've just handed out far too many baggy greens. Hendrika's got 280s, I reckon, in his first test match in India, or his second test match. And where's he gone? 3 test matches? There's so many guys. What did Joe Burns do wrong? What did Doolan do wrong?
I'd like to know what they did wrong.
You know, you give them a bit of a chance. Doolan had to run into Steyn in South Africa, and Steyn bowls beautifully over there. Apparently, he couldn't score quick enough. We hear that Khawaja wasn't very good in the field. He didn't, he wasn't busy enough in the field. Well, give us a break. Let him learn the ropes. Get him taught by all these coaches. Khawaja, to me, was when he came back, he should have been stuck with. He could hang around in a test match arena.
Well, I think you'll find he'll be on the next plane to Bangladesh with the Australians when they announce that squad sooner rather than later. We've missed Hoggy. We've missed him drastically in studio. We've had a chat to him down the line, but it's not quite the same when you've got the great man here and he's ready and prepared to sit out across the road, the tram stop, with his books and do signing
tram
sessions.
Stop.
Hour after hour after hour. He's going to live at Ribera's and just get out the front there in the foyer and just sign books for people as well. You're going to be busy, Hoggy.
If not, I'll have to make it 45 if not many turn up. If you turn up, you're there, aren't you?
Well, I've got an SMS from a world-renowned surgeon who said you can name your price. He loves you.
Well, he'll have plenty of money. He can pay 45 for a book, surely. He's loaded.
We'll see what we can do. Paul's on the Hume, Hoggy. He's probably in Albury by now. G'day, Paul.
No, just getting out of Melbourne.
Had enough of Melbourne?
No, that's how it is in this job. Look, great show, Half, and Hoggy, I don't listen to you a lot because of the hours I work, but I'm just wondering your thoughts. I've been hearing a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit, that there's a chance that Michael Clarke may not have actually gone on this Ashes tour as captain if it hadn't have been the tragedy of Philip Hughes and how well he handled himself and kept the team together through that. Have you heard that anywhere at all?
No, not prepared to go down that path. Sorry.
Haven't heard that?
No.
Nothing to that? The Paul
not, but not interested in that path of discussion, really.
Right, okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Thank you, Paul. If it's got no merit according to you, then there's no place to take it. Can I ask you this, though? I was talking to a learned gentleman on the weekend in regards to Michael Clarke. I mentioned this yesterday briefly. Do you think that perhaps the incident with Philip spooked Michael Clarke and his batting? Because he was very... Since that point in time, he made the ton in Adelaide. But his footwork, he wasn't the Michael Clarke that we ever knew from that point in time on, but in terms of the way he moved his feet.
Well, prior to that, he wasn't making it. 30 hits he's had, but I can still see that attempted pull shot in Adelaide, and he'd made some runs. It wasn't just early in his innings. And he went down like a bag, didn't he? Just went straight down to the ground, just with an ordinary little sort of attempted pull. So he's had a bad back, and then the hamstring went when he came back, so... I don't know, but I just think the reflexes have gone all of a sudden. But you might be right about his footwork, but footwork is reflexes.
His footwork's been horrific, and that's been well publicised.
But in that last innings, or the no, the first innings when he ballooned. He protected his face with a hook. You can't do that. You either hook or you get out of the way. We're talking about Test cricket. They know he doesn't play the short ball very well, and Broad stayed away from it. Broad's tactics were brilliant because Broad's got him out over the years so many times with the short stuff.
Yep.
He stayed away from it, pitched the ball up and made Michael chase him because Michael's always a little bit looking for the short one. But he got a short one from, I think it might have been Wood, and he just ballooned it. He protected his face with a hook shot. You don't do that. That's you're gone as a test cricketer if you're protecting your face with a hook shot. You either hook it or you don't hook it. And it ballooned straight up, you know, and then it landed short of a fine leg. And I thought, there's his little... And then he inside edge one, went down for four. And I thought, oh, the gods might be on his side here to give him a bit of a chance to... And then he played that
and
big...
Slashed.
And he said, if you live by the sword, but you die by... Michael Clarke's never batted like that. That was just... That was what happens when you're not in control of what's going on.
This is why we love when you're in the studio. We can get this sort of gold out here. It's a bit harder down the line. That's good stuff.
Bronze.
That was at least silver.
No, bronze.
Pushing gold. It's been great to see you, Rodney.
They got Cowdery out of his... It was winter in England. They rang him up and he thought he must be taking a tour. He came out and faced Tomo at the Wacker. And he hadn't met Tomo before. And he said, oh, hello, Jeffrey. My name's Colin Cowdery. He said, I don't care who you are, if that's so.
Thank you, Rod.